Maybe not through words, but through body language. You won't always bridge the communication gap or ease frustration, but your sweet talker will take note that you're paying close attention, which will encourage more verbal efforts. Question, question, question. Ask lots of questions. Should we walk to the park or the play gym? Do you think Grandma would like this birthday card with flowers on it or this one with the birds? Then follow up with an answer. Yes, I think Grandma would like these pretty birds. Yep, you're talking to yourself technically, but you're also modeling the give and take of conversation. Give a play-by-play. Stumped for a topic of conversation? Just tell your baby what you're doing. Mama is zipping up Jaden's jacket. Zip. That will keep you nice and warm. Now let's put on some mittens. One, two, and a hat. How about this one with the blue dots? Hear something? Point it out to your baby. Listen, a doggy is barking. Or, I hear a car going zoom, zoom down the street. And be sure to explain what's going on around your little one, too. It's sunny today. The apple is in the fridge. Daddy uses a little brush to brush your teeth and a big brush for your hair. The ball goes up, the ball comes down. Soap makes my hands clean. And so on. Concentrate on concepts. Language learning isn't just about words, it's about concepts too. So take the time to teach your baby as you go about your day. Hot and cold. Let baby touch the outside of your warm, not hot, coffee cup, then an ice cube. Cold water, then warm water. Warm oatmeal, then cold milk. Point out that the yogurt you took out of the fridge is cold. The peas you took out of the freezer are very cold. Brrr. Up and down. Gently lift baby up in the air, then lower to the ground. Place the toy up on the dresser, then put it down on the floor. Go up the stairs or escalator or elevator together, then down. In and out. Put blocks in a container, dump them out. Pour water in a cup, then pour it out. Fill the shopping cart with groceries, then take them out at the checkout. Empty and full. Show baby a container filled with bath water, then one that's empty. A pail filled with sand, then an empty one. Stand and sit. Hold baby's hands, stand together, then sit down together. Use Ring Around the Rosie to help with this concept. If baby's not yet standing, hold him or her while you stand and sit. Wet and dry. Compare a wet washcloth and a dry towel. Baby's just shampooed hair with your dry hair. Wet laundry with dry laundry. Dry cereal with cereal that's moistened with milk. Big and little. Set a big ball beside a little one or sit a big teddy next to a little one. Show baby that daddy is big and baby is little in the mirror. Become color conscious. Colors are everywhere, so start identifying them whenever you can. Look at that red balloon. It's red, just like your shirt. Or that truck is green and your stroller is green too. Or look at those pretty yellow flowers. Keep in mind, however, that most little ones don't learn their colors. They may notice different colors but can't typically identify them until sometime around age 3. Use doublespeak. Use adult phrases, then translate them into baby shorthand. Did you hurt yourself when you fell? Did Connor get a boo-boo? Oh, you finished your snack. Kylie made all gone. Talking twice as much will help baby understand twice as much. Don't talk like a baby. Baby talk is precious, especially when you're imitating your baby. But opting for simplified grown-up talk rather than baby talk will help your baby learn to speak your language faster. Abby wants a bottle instead of baby want a baba. Forms like doggy or dolly, however, are always fine to use with babies. They're naturally more appealing. Introduce pronouns. Baby won't know a he from a him or an I from a me for at least a year to come. But that's no reason to pass by these pronouns now. Help develop familiarity with pronouns by using them along with names. Daddy is going to get Liam breakfast. I'm going to get you breakfast. This book is Mommy's. It's mine. That book is Ella's. It's yours. Encourage talking back. Use any ploy you can think of to get your baby to respond, and it doesn't matter if the response comes in the form of words or gestures. Ask your little chatterbox to be questions. Do you want bread or crackers? Do you want to wear your Elmo pajamas or the ones with Thomas on them? Or are you sleepy? And then give baby a chance to answer. Any answer counts. It could be a shake of the head, a pointing finger or hand, a gesture, a grunt, or another creative pre-verbal response. Get baby to help you locate things, even if they really aren't lost. Can you find the ball? Give baby plenty of time to turn up the item and reinforce with cheers. Even looking in the right direction should count. That's right, there's the ball. And remember, never withhold something because your little one doesn't have the word power to ask for it by name. Or later, when pronunciation is less than perfect. And later still, when grammar's not quite up to speed. Keep directions simple. Sometime around the first birthday, often before, most little ones can begin following simple commands, but only if they're issued one step at a time. Instead of, please pick up the spoon and give it to me, try, please pick up the spoon. And when that's been done, add, now, please give the spoon to Daddy. Correct carefully. Don't count on your baby saying those new words perfectly for a while, or even understandably. Many consonants will be beyond your baby's reach for the next several years, and even basic words may be abbreviated. Momeh may mean more milk, and dow signal go down. When your baby, age appropriately, mispronounces a word, use a subtle approach to correct, teaching without preaching, so you don't discourage next efforts. When baby looks up at the sky and says, woo, tar, respond with, that's right, there's the moon and the stars. Though baby mispronunciations are adorable, resist the temptation to repeat them, which will be confusing. Baby's supposed to be learning how they should sound. Expand your reading repertoire. Books are a super source of new words for a baby, so call for story time often. Baby's attention span is still too short for a cover-to-cover sitting. Keep it interesting by making reading interactive. Stop to discuss the pictures. Look, the cat is wearing a hat. Ask your child to point to familiar objects. Naming them will come later. And name those that he or she hasn't seen before or doesn't remember. Simplify language where necessary to boost comprehension and find the rhythm in rhymes. Pretty soon your little listener will be able to fill in words that have become familiar. Think numerically. Counting may be a long way off for baby, but that doesn't mean numbers and the concept of one or many don't count now. Comments like, here, you can have one cookie, or look, see how many birds are in that tree, or you have two kitty cats. Add basic mathematical concepts. Count or recite, one, two, buckle my shoe, as you climb the stairs with your baby, particularly once he or she can walk up while you hold both hands. Sing number rhymes such as ba, ba, black sheep. When you get to the three bags full, hold up three fingers, then bend down one finger at a time as you pretend to distribute the bags. Or this old man. This old man, he played one. He played knick-knack on my thumb. Integrate counting into your baby's life. Count out your crunches, the cups of flour you're adding to the muffin batter, the banana slices you're topping baby cereal with. Sign up. Using signs and hand motions for words reduces frustration for both of you by allowing your baby to communicate before he or she is able to say real words. Those pudgy little fingers can speak volumes. And signing doesn't interfere with your little one's spoken language development. In fact, most experts say the reverse is true. As you teach signs, you also use your words. And talking to your baby is the best way to get him or her talking.
Chapter 17, The 12th Month.
Life's a game to baby these days, or actually, due to a relatively short attention span, many different games played in rapid succession. One game that will soon become particularly engaging, dropping things. Babies finally figured out how to let go of objects, seeing them fall, watching mommy or daddy pick them up, and then repeating the sequence over and over, preferably until parental backs are aching and patience is worn thin. Push toys may become another obsession, since they help little ones who are just starting out on two feet stay steady as they go, and go, and go. If the push toy has a place to hold stuff, say a favorite stuffed animal, a collection of blocks, mommy's wallet, daddy's keys, or anything else picked up along the way, all the better. This month you may also notice signs that your baby, small and cute though he or she still is, won't be a baby much longer. As independent mobility progresses, you'll slowly but surely begin to glimpse behaviors, the dawn of negativity, primitive temper tantrums, a mini my way or the highway mindset that foreshadow the theme of the year that lies ahead. I am toddler, hear me roar.
Feeding your baby. Weaning from the breast.
Weaning from the breast may be just around the corner or months or even years down the line. Either way, it's a big step on that long road to independence, a step that means your little one will never again be quite so dependent on you for a meal. It's also a step that's almost as big for you as it is for your baby, and one you'll want to be prepared for physically and emotionally. For support and strategies dealing with this major milestone, whenever it comes, listen on.
Baby basics at a glance. 12th month. Sleeping. As the first birthday approaches, expect your nearly tot to sleep around 10 to 12 hours per night. Plus, take 2 daytime naps. They might get shorter, or one longer nap, for a total of anywhere between 12 and 14 hours. Eating. Breast milk or formula intake tops out at about 24 ounces or less per day and should edge closer to 16 ounces per day by the first birthday, with solid food becoming the more important part of baby's diet. Some babies are big eaters, some smaller eaters, which means intake will vary a lot. So what's the average? Around a quarter to a half cup each of grains, fruit, and veggies twice a day, a quarter to a half cup or more of dairy foods per day, and a quarter to a half cup or more of protein foods per day. Keep in mind that some babies will eat less as they enter the second year and as their rate of growth slows down. Playing. Babies walking, or almost walking? Pull and push toys will top the list of favorites now, so bring out the baby doll stroller, the toy shopping cart, or the activity center on wheels that baby can push around the house. Ride on toys that push your little one toward independent mobility will also appeal to your almost toddler. But don't neglect the old-time favorites, blocks and other stacking toys, puzzles and shape sorters, puppets, activity cubes, musical toys, crayons and markers, and of course, books and lots of them. Role-play toys will start to play a role too, as baby becomes more imaginative and a master mimic. Think dolls, a playhouse, a play kitchen, pretend food and tableware, a toy phone, a workbench, a doctor kit.
When to wean. Those early days of breastfeeding, when you fumbled through every feeding session, when you spent as much time nursing sore nipples as you did nursing your baby, when let down often let you down, are now just a blur. These days, breastfeeding is second nature for both you and baby. Something you can both do in your sleep and probably occasionally do. You feel as if you've been breastfeeding forever, and in a way, you wish that you could breastfeed forever. At the same time, maybe you're wondering whether it's almost time to call it quits. When to wean? While there are plenty of facts and feelings to consider, ultimately, Mom, it's up to you. Meanwhile, think on the facts. You've heard this one before, over and over again. Though any amount of breastfeeding is better than none, the AAP recommends that breastfeeding continue ideally for at least a full year, and then for as long as both mom and baby want to keep it up. Waiting until the first birthday to wean means that the baby who has never taken formula can move directly from breast milk to cups of milk with no formula stopgap in between. And that's definitely a plus. Not in any hurry to wean your baby, and your baby's in no hurry to be weaned. There are no facts standing in the way of continued breastfeeding into the second year, the third year, or even beyond. Just remember that since busy toddlers need more protein, vitamins, and other nutrients than breast milk alone can provide, they'll need to do their share of eating and cow's milk drinking, too. Does your breastfeeding teammate share your bed and do a lot of all-night nipping? Just one caveat to consider. While as a group, breastfed children develop fewer cavities than those who are bottle-fed, according to the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry, throughout the night, breastfeeds, which aren't necessary for an older baby anyway, can lead to dental decay, especially once carbs have been introduced into baby's diet. While the risk is far lower than it is for all-night bottle feeders, it makes sense to avoid this potential pitfall by nursing at bedtime, but not throughout the night. Your feelings. Are you still enjoying breastfeeding as much as ever? Are you in absolutely no rush to give up this special part of your relationship with baby? Then continue as long as you and baby like. Or are you starting to grow weary of hauling your breasts in and out of your nursing bra and weary of wearing nursing bras? Are you beginning to yearn for some of the freedom and flexibility that seem but a pipe dream as long as you're piping in your baby's milk supply? Is the idea of breastfeeding a toddler just not within your comfort zone? If that sounds like your profile, you may want to consider weaning soon after your baby's first birthday. Your baby's feelings. Is your little one restless at the breast, indifferent when you unhook your nursing bra, nursing for only a minute before wriggling to get down? Your baby might be telling you something, not in so many words, but in so many actions. Actions that show your little nurser may be ready to move on to the future, a future where liquid nourishment comes from a different source. Self-weaning is most likely to happen somewhere between 9 and 12 months. So if your baby seems to want to bid the breast bye-bye, it may be time to let go. Just remember, taking those first steps to self-weaning doesn't mean your baby is rejecting you. Only the milk delivery service you've been providing. Of course, it's very possible to misinterpret a baby's signals. At 5 months, lack of interest in nursing may only be a sign of your little one's growing interest in the world around him or her. Who has time to nurse when there are so many bright, shiny objects vying for baby's attention? At 7 months, it may suggest a craving for getting up and going that outweighs any craving for hunkering down and eating. At 9 months or later, it may be the first sign of an emerging independent streak and a preference for sipping fluids from a cup. And at any age, it could be a response to distractions. Nursing in a dark, quiet room can minimize those. A stuffy nose, it's hard to breathe when your nose is stuffed and your mouth is stuffed with a nipple. Or teething. Ouch. Your baby is as attached to the breast as ever. Maybe more so. It's possible that he or she will never be the one to take the initiative in weaning, which means weaning will be your call when the time comes. That's just as common and just as normal. Your situation. Recommendations aside, sometimes the logistics of juggling breasts, baby, and life, including work or school, can get in the way of continued breastfeeding. Penciling nursing into a busy schedule starts to get tricky, especially if the logistics must include a breast pump, as well as transporting and storing milk. For some moms, it's just a matter of the physical toll continued breastfeeding can take. It can be a drain, literally, particularly for pumpers. If breastfeeding just isn't fitting in with your life or your lifestyle anymore, consider weaning, either fully or partially. Your baby's situation. The best time to wean a baby is when all's quiet on the home front. Baby's sick? Teething? Are you moving? Going on vacation? Returning to work? Have you changed babysitters? Has Daddy just been deployed on a long mission or gone on an extended business trip? It's probably best to hold off on weaning until there's less uncertainty and stress in your little one's life. Your baby's bottle and cup skills. If your baby is a pro at bottles because you've been supplementing or pumping, weaning from breast to bottle will be a breeze. Likewise, if your baby has picked up cup drinking already, weaning directly to a cup and bypassing the bottle completely will be a cinch. If, however, your baby resists taking milk from any source but your breast, weaning will have to wait until either the bottle or the cup, a better option as baby approaches the first birthday, is mastered. Whenever and however it comes for you, weaning is bound to be a time of mixed emotions. On the one hand, you may be somewhat relieved to be relieved of your breastfeeding responsibilities, positively giddy at the prospect of more freedom, a late night out on the town, a weekend out of town, of leaving for work without a breast pump, of ditching your nursing bras. But at the same time, you'll probably be more than a little misty at the end of this chapter in your mommy-baby relationship. Whether early or late, weaning is an inevitable milestone in a child's development. As they say, nobody goes off to college still breastfeeding. Your little one probably won't end up missing breastfeeding for more than a brief time and will likely move on more quickly than you'd really like. And you too will survive this monumental mommyhood moment, though realistically you'll always have a special place in your heart reserved for the months and maybe years spent breastfeeding your baby. How to wean from the breast. Have you decided to call it quits on the breast? With weaning right around the corner, it's probably looming large. So it might be comforting to know that the process is already in progress. You actually started to wean the first time you offered your baby a sip from the cup, a nip from the bottle, or a nibble from a spoon. And whether you realize it or not, you've been taking baby steps ever since. Weaning is basically a two-phase process, one of which is likely well underway or even fully accomplished. Phase 1. Getting baby used to other sources of food beyond your breasts. Chances are you've already begun baby on solids, but what about the cup? Ultimately, the cup will be an important conveyor of nutritive fluids every growing child needs, probably in the form of cow's milk. But since it takes lots of practice to become a cup pro, it's ideal to get that practice started as soon as possible, while your baby is still somewhat open to change. Fast forward a few months, and you'll definitely hit a cooperation speed bump. Getting the cup established now is smart no matter when you'll be weaning, but it's especially key if you'll be moving on to phase 2 of weaning soon. Keep in mind that weaning to a bottle doesn't make sense at this late date. After all, doctors recommend weaning from a bottle at the first birthday. Is your almost toddler resisting the cup already, refusing to sip from anything but the best, breast? Break down resistance by serving up a cup when baby's hungry. Hunger can sometimes wear a baby down, so try offering the cup instead of a scheduled breastfeed. Baby just becomes cranky, not pliable when hungry? Then offer the cup after a feed, or serve it with meals and snacks. Staying out of the picture, as when you were introducing the bottle, if you did, baby's more likely to be up for the cup when mom's not the one offering it. After all, breast can be distracting to a breastfeeding baby. Switching it up. Some babies are more likely to consider the cup if it's filled with familiar breast milk. Others are more open to the cup if it doesn't remind them of the breast. In that case, substitute formula before age 1. You can also offer water or watered-down juice after a year old for practice. After a year and the doctors go ahead, you can switch directly to whole cow's milk. Varying the cups. If you've been trying a sippy cup, try a straw cup, or a cup that allows baby to drink from the rim, just like you do. These are available in covered, spill-proof form or with special inserts that slow the flow of liquid. Being relaxed. Of course you're eager for baby to start taking the cup, especially if you're eager to get weaning. But don't let your baby know that. Put on an indifferent front, as if you couldn't care less whether baby took the cup or not. Practice patience and give it time. Phase 2. Cutting back on breastfeedings. Are you considering a cold turkey approach to weaning? Say, leaving your breastfed baby for an overnight or weekend and taking your breasts with you? Usually, that's not the best game plan for either member of the breastfeeding team. For your little one, it may be too unsettling. For you, sudden weaning can make a mom an emotional mess, especially once hormonal havoc has been unleashed. And a physical one, too. Leaking, painful engorgement, clogged ducts, and infection are all more likely if nursing stops suddenly. So unless illness, a sudden need for travel without baby, or some other event in your lives makes cold turkey weaning necessary, take it slowly. Wean gradually, beginning at least several weeks and up to many months before your targeted weaning completion date. Once you're down to a single feed, you can consider taking yourself and your breasts out of the picture entirely for a day or two, leaving baby with daddy, grandparents, or another favorite non-lactating care provider. This kind of mommy break can sometimes ease the final adjustment to the world of weaned. There are two common approaches to gradual weaning. Dropping feedings. This is usually the easier way to go. Begin dropping one feeding at a time, waiting at least a few days, but preferably a week, until your breasts and your baby have adjusted to that loss before dropping another. First to go should be the feedings your baby is least attached to, most likely those midday ones. Over a couple of weeks, cut back to just two favorite feedings a day, typically those that offer the most comfort for both of you, first in the morning and bedtime, then one. Bedtime's usually the last to go. You might want to continue the bedtime nursing for weeks or even months, even if your baby's otherwise weaned. Be sure to add formula or milk once it's been approved, and a snack or meal to replace any feedings you drop. And don't forget to supplement, too, with generous amounts of affection and attention. Cutting down on each feeding. Instead of cutting out feedings, you can cut down on each one. To start, take the edge off of your little one's appetite before feeds by offering a snack, along with a cup of formula or whole cow's milk if your baby has already turned one. Then offer the breast. Gradually, over the course of several weeks, he or she will be taking more from the cup or bottle and less from your breast. Eventually, your baby will wean completely. How will your baby handle weaning from the breast? Since every baby's different, reactions will vary, but all will be normal. Some little ones will turn to alternative sources of comfort, such as the thumb or a blanket during weaning. Some will become extra clingy, pawing or sniffing at your breasts or trying to lift up or even open your shirt are all definite possibilities. But even the most committed breastfeeding fans don't seem to miss nursing for very long. Some, in fact, move on so quickly that it takes their misty-eyed moms aback. As you adjust to the new feeding norm and the fact that it no longer includes the special bond of breastfeeding, it may help to remember that nursing is only one part of your relationship with your baby. Giving it up won't weaken the bond or lessen the love between you. That's already cemented for life. In fact, you may find that closing up shop on breastfeeding means that you'll open up even more dimensions in your relationship with your baby.
For parents, making the breast adjustment. For your little one, moving on after weaning probably won't take long. A little extra comfort, a few distracting activities, and he or she will be ready to toddle off to face a future that doesn't include breastfeeding. For you and your breasts, weaning may be a heavier lift. Though taking it slowly will lessen that load, literally, since you'll gradually be making less milk, meaning your breasts will become gradually lighter, it won't guarantee a perfectly smooth adjustment. Some discomfort is a given, and if you wean more suddenly, you can experience engorgement, though thankfully, the fullness shouldn't be nearly as bad as it was when your milk first came in. You can find relief in warm showers, warm compresses, a dose of pain reliever as needed, and perhaps expressing just enough milk to relieve the pressure, but not enough to stimulate production. Several weeks after weaning, your breasts may seem totally empty of milk, but don't be surprised if you're still able to express small amounts of milk months, even a year or more later. This is perfectly normal. It's also normal for breasts to take time to return to their former size, or close to it, and they often end up somewhat larger or smaller, and very often lopsided. A possible unexpected side effect of weaning, you may start shedding the hair that you accumulated during pregnancy. Sometimes this normal postpartum hair loss is delayed until after breastfeeding wraps up. Weaning can also take an emotional toll on you. Your hormones will have to adjust to the new reality of retirement, an adjustment that isn't made overnight. There is no off switch for milk production. You may become irritable, have mood swings, feel down, even a little depressed. Add to that the sense of loss and sadness you may have about giving up this special part of your relationship with your little one, and you may feel a familiar sense of baby blues. That's not only completely understandable, it's completely normal. Though if you feel more than a little depressed, check in with a doctor. Sometimes postpartum depression can surface for the first time after weaning. What you may be wondering about.
Not yet walking.
My son will turn one next week, and he hasn't even tried taking his first step. Shouldn't he be walking by now?
It may seem fitting for a baby to take his first steps by his first birthday. After all, isn't that when he officially becomes a toddler? But many opt to crawl their way into their second year instead. Though some little ones start walking weeks or even months earlier, others won't totter toward the momentous milestone until much later. The majority of tots, in fact, don't begin their adventures on 2 feet until after their first birthday, though the vast majority will be stepping out on their own by 18 months. And when it comes to walking, age doesn't matter either. Whether a little one takes those first steps at 9 months, 15 months, or even later is no reflection on his future abilities, not even athletic ones. When your little one starts walking may be determined by genetics. Early or late walking runs in families, or by his weight and build. A wiry, muscular baby is more likely to walk earlier than a placid, plump one. Or by personality, a tot who's a born risk taker is more likely to rise to the challenge of walking sooner than one who's naturally cautious. It may also be related to when and how well he learns to crawl. A little one who's an ineffective crawler, or who doesn't crawl at all, sometimes walks before the baby who is perfectly content racing about on all fours. A negative experience, perhaps a bad fall for the first time a tentative one-year-old let go of a parent's hand, can also delay those first steps. If that happened to your fledgling toddler, he may decide it's not worth chancing steps again until he's very steady, at which point he may take off like a pro. Feeling under the weather, energy and exuberance zapped by teething, a cold, an ear infection, for instance, can also put walking on hold. Some babies don't give toddling a try because they're too often corralled in a play yard, strapped in a stroller, enclosed in an exerciser, or otherwise given little chance to develop their leg muscles and their confidence through standing and cruising. Give your baby plenty of time and space to practice pulling up, cruising, standing, and stepping. He'll do it best if he's barefoot, since babies use their toes for gripping when they take their first steps. Socks can be slippery, and some shoes can be stiff. And bring on the encouragement, too, since a baby who's quite content sitting it out may need a little coaxing to join the action. Playfully challenge him to come walking after you. Try to catch me. Remember, your little one will start performing great feats on 2 feet when he's ready. Until then, don't stress the finish line. Enjoy the journey. Yes, the one with all the bumps and falls, false starts and baby steps. And that victory lap will come soon enough. Shyness.
My wife and I are very outgoing, so we're sort of surprised to see how shy our son is. Whenever anyone tries to talk to him, he'll hide his face.
It's way too soon to assume your son hasn't inherited the genial gene from you, or that he won't follow in your friendly footsteps. After all, he's still very short on social experiences and limited in the interactions he's had, with others besides you at least. So what seems shy to you is actually developmentally appropriate social tentativeness. Hiding his face in the stroller seat, your shoulder, your leg, is a normal, common, and very reasonable reaction to having people in his face, particularly people who are, as most people he encounters are, big and unfamiliar. While being the life of the party may well be in his future, right now he may be dealing with stranger anxiety. Some babies start showing this hesitation around anyone but mommy and daddy as early as 7 months. But many don't start shying away from strangers, keeping in mind that this category can lump together strangers as well as people baby knows or even knows well, until closer to the first year. Separation anxiety. Situations that require socializing often require separating from mommy and daddy. Clinging at a playgroup or when a family friend tries to pick up your son isn't a sign that he's shy, just that he's unsure about venturing off or even socializing without you. Unfamiliar anxiety. For a newly mobile baby, the world is an exciting place to explore, but it can also be a scary one. In the face of so much change, older babies often shrink away from the unfamiliar, deriving comfort from continuity and consistency. All mommy and daddy, all the time. If they're going to explore the unfamiliar, you better believe it will be on their terms. Say, trying to slip away in a crowd at the mall. A good reason why you shouldn't count on unfamiliar anxiety to keep your little one safely by your side. Social anxiety. This is, again, a matter of social experience, or rather, lack of social experience. You've been talking your way around town for years. Your little one can't even talk. You've worked more rooms than you can recall. Your baby may not even have worked a playroom. Factor in his size, far smaller than the adults who try to interact with him, and it's not surprising he's stressed in social situations. Of course, some children, like some adults, turn out to be more socially reserved by nature, and some are, by temperament, especially slow to warm up. Still others are naturally more outgoing. Not only is it too soon to call where your little one will eventually fall on the social spectrum, but labeling him now can actually prevent him from reaching his social potential. Any label can stick, from shy to troublemaker, which is why it's best to avoid applying them at any age. Instead, gently support and encourage your baby in social situations, but never force him to face his fears or show his face to a stranger when he'd rather bury it in the security of your armpit. Sit down with him on the floor so he'll feel more comfortable playing at a birthday party, but don't push him to smile, say hi, or sit in someone else's lap. Let him respond to people on his own terms and at his own pace, while letting him know that you're always there for him if he needs a leg to cling to or a shoulder to hide his head in, and the social butterfly within your little caterpillar will eventually open up.
Handle with care. Now that your toddler is on 2 feet, or almost so, you may be tempted to try out that childhood classic, 1, 2, 3, wee, with you and another adult swinging your little one through the air as he or she walks between you, holding your hands. But because of a young child's still rather loose ligaments and not fully formed bones, swinging or lifting him or her by the hands, or suddenly twisting or tugging an arm to get a tot moving faster, can result in a partially dislocated elbow, aka nursemaid's elbow. The injury While very easy to repair, a doctor can pop the dislocation right back into place, is extremely painful. It's also very simple to avoid. Always lift from the armpits and avoid tugging on your little one's arms. The first birthday party. What do one-year-old babies know about parties? Not much, actually. Which is why you might want to resist the urge to throw a huge birthday bash for your baby of honor, who might end up cracking under the pressure of too many guests, too much excitement, too much entertainment, and spending much of the celebration in tears. So think small, like your little one, when thinking about the first birthday party, and follow this strategy so it's a party to remember instead of one you'd rather forget. Keep the invites light. A room too crowded, even with familiar faces, may overwhelm your birthday baby. Unless you're sure your little one can handle a big crowd, consider keeping it on the intimate side, maybe just a few family members and close friends. If your baby spends time with other babies, you may want to invite a few, along with their parents. You probably won't want to be responsible for supervising any baby but yours. If not, a first birthday party probably isn't the best time to launch your little one's social career. Ditto the decor. A room decorated with all that your local party store has to offer and then some may be your dream, but maybe not your baby's. Too many balloons, streamers, banners, masks, noisemakers, and hats, like too many people, may prove too much for a one-year-old to process. So decorate with a light hand. If balloons will round out your party picture, remember to dispose of them post-party. Tiny tots can choke on the rubber scraps left after balloons go pop. Or choose Mylar balloons, though remember that any string tied to a balloon also presents a safety risk. Simple, safe favors such as brightly colored large rubber balls, board books, or bath toys are a fun extra and can be handed to young guests just before the gifts are opened. Serve up safety. Many favorite party nibbles pose a choking risk, from M&Ms, Skittles, and jelly beans to olives, popcorn, nuts, and cocktail franks, so choose the party menu accordingly. Time it right. Scheduling is everything when it comes to a baby's party. Try to orchestrate the big day's activities so that baby is well-rested, recently fed, don't hold off on lunch figuring he or she will eat at the party, and on a normal schedule. Don't plan a morning party if baby usually naps in the morning, or an early afternoon party if he or she usually conks out after lunch. Inviting a tired baby to participate in festivities is inviting disaster. Keep the party brief, 1.5 to 2 hours at the most, so your baby won't be a wreck when the party's over, or worse, in the middle of it all. Don't send in the clowns, or magicians, or any other entertainment that might frighten your baby or any other young guests. One-year-olds can be sensitive and unpredictable. What delights them one minute may terrify them the next. Also, don't try to organize the pre-toddler set into formal party games. They're not ready for that yet. If there are several young guests, however, put out a selection of toys for non-structured play, with enough of the same items to avoid competition, and maybe a few age-appropriate craft activities that little ones and their parents can work on together, or just a pile of paper and washable markers or crayons. Have the budget to rent out a party space like a play gym? That can be a fun option, and an easier option for you if it comes with staff to set up, clean up, and help out with the little ones. Just make sure the facilities are one-year-old appropriate. Don't command a performance. It would be nice, of course, if baby would smile for the camera, take a few steps for the company, open each present with interest, and coo appreciatively over it. But don't count on it. He or she might learn to blow out the candles if you give it enough practice during the month before the party, but don't expect complete cooperation, and don't apply pressure. Instead, let your baby be your baby, whether that means squirming out of your arms during that party pose, refusing even to stand on his or her own 2 feet during the step-taking exhibition, or opting to play with an empty box instead of the expensive gift that came in it. Take the cake and make it a smash. What first birthday party is complete without a smash cake or cupcake for baby to dive into headfirst? Whether it features layers of frosting or something a little healthier, it makes sense to undress your baby to a diaper before serving it up. And for safety's sake, to make sure that any candles or any chokeable decorations, including candy, are removed first. Record it, of course. The party will be over much too quickly, so you'll want plenty of pictures and video taken, preferably by someone else, so you can enjoy the event in real time. And speaking of enjoying it, make sure you do. Another perk of a smaller, more casual party? You're less likely to stress, more likely to have fun, which in turn will mean more fun all around.
Social skills. We've been involved in a playgroup for the last few weeks, and I've noticed that my baby doesn't play with the others. How can I get her to be more sociable?
Sit back and relax. This could take a while. Though a baby is a social being from birth, she isn't capable of being truly sociable until at least the age of 18 months, as you'll see if you peek in at any group of babies and young toddlers at play. Tots at a playgroup may interact, often just long enough to grab another child's shovel, or shove a peer away from a push toy that's caught their eye. But most of their play is done in the parallel mode. They'll play side by side, but not together. They definitely get a kick out of watching peers at play, but they won't necessarily join in with them. Naturally and normally me-centric, babies and young toddlers aren't yet able to recognize that other children might make worthy playmates. In fact, they still see them largely as objects, moving interesting objects, but objects nonetheless. All of which is completely age-appropriate. While one-year-olds who have had plenty of group play practice, for instance, at daycare, may progress faster in the sociability department, every child will progress eventually. Pushing your daughter to play with other children in her group when she'd rather play by herself, or cling to your leg, also common, won't advance her social skills faster, and it might trigger more tentativeness. For best results, continue to offer your cutie opportunities to socialize, and then let her socialize at her own pace, whatever that pace turns out to be. Of course, more opportunities for socializing also allow for more opportunities for hitting, toy grabbing, and having trouble with sharing and taking turns. All normal behaviors for kids this age. To learn more about these and other toddler behaviors, check out What to Expect the Second Year. You may want to check it out soon. Many of these behaviors get their start before the first birthday. Putting the weaned baby to bed.
I've never put my daughter to bed awake. She's always been nursed to sleep. How am I going to get her to sleep at night when she's weaned to a cup?
How easy it's always been for your baby to suckle her way blissfully into dreamland. And how easy for you to nurse your way hassle-free to a peaceful evening. From now on, however, if you're serious about weaning your baby from her nightcap, bedding her down is going to take a little more effort on both sides of the crib rail. To make this goal a reality, follow this plan, starting well before you plan to wean, and actually even if you're planning to continue bedtime feeds indefinitely, since learning how to fall asleep without the breast is a skill your baby will eventually need. Keep the old rituals. A bedtime routine with each step played out in the same order each evening can work its sleepy magic on anyone, babies included. If you haven't made evening and naptime routines routine at your home, start now. And get a game plan together for getting your little one sleepy without her favorite nightcap. Add a new twist. Before you retire that bedtime feed, add a bedtime snack to your baby's ritual, if it's not already on the schedule. A slot after bath and PJs usually works well. Keep it light but satisfying. A whole grain mini muffin and a half cup of milk, once milk has been cleared, perhaps. Or a piece of cheese and some crackers or banana slices. Not only will a mini meal eventually come to take the place of the nursing she'll be giving up, but the milk will have a sleep-inducing effect. Of course, if you've been brushing baby's teeth earlier in the evening, you will now have to move this part of the routine to after her snack. If she's thirsty once her teeth are brushed, offer her water. Break the old habit, but try not to replace it with a new one. Sure, it might be easier just to reroute baby's nightly trip to Dreamland via the Rocking Express or the Lullaby Local once you discontinue bedtime breastfeeding service. But if you'd like her to develop sleep self-sufficiency, she'll need to at some point, you'll have to let her figure out how to fall asleep on her own. Do plenty of cuddling during the bedtime routine, then put her down, happy, hopefully, snug, and drowsy, but awake. If you'd like to stay a while, patting and reassuring her, go for it. Expect a fuss. Chances are your baby will resist this bold new approach to bedtime loudly. Few babies will accept the switch willingly, though some may accept it much more readily if mom and her breasts, constant reminders of what was, isn't the one doing the bedding down. But expect, too, that baby will adjust fairly quickly to a bedtime without nursing, as she will to all aspects of weaning. Heap on other forms of comfort in the meantime. Switching to a bed.
We're expecting a second baby in 6 months. Should we switch our son from his crib to a bed?
The best place for your little one is in his crib, even if he's soon to become a big brother. Experts recommend that toddlers transition from crib to bed at about age 2.5 to 3, or when they're taller than 35 inches. Though if they reach this height at a younger age, but still aren't climbing out, it's better to hold off on crib graduation until they're closer to age 3. Until then, your son is safer in the confines of his crib, especially if he hasn't started trying to climb out of it yet. Most 1-year-olds don't attempt escape. After all, having the ability to hop out of bed and roam your home during the night presents plenty of risks. Even a new baby isn't reason to push your pre-toddler out of his digs. You're better off buying or borrowing a second crib for your second baby, or switching your big boy to a crib that can convert into a junior bed when he's ready, or keeping the new arrival in a bassinet and then a portable crib until your older child is truly ready to move out of the crib and into a bed. Using a pillow and a blanket.
I haven't given my baby a pillow or a blanket in her crib because of the risk of SIDS. But now that she's almost 1, I'm wondering if it's safe to let her sleep with them.
For you, a bed might not be a bed without a pillow or 2 or 3 to rest your head on and a fluffy comforter to cuddle beneath. But for a baby who has slept flat and uncovered on the mattress since birth, pillows and blankets aren't an issue. What she doesn't know can't bother her or keep her up at night. And that's just as well. While the time of greatest risk for suffocation and SIDS has passed, most experts agree there's no compelling reason to put a pillow in your little one's crib. Besides, since she probably does a lot of tossing, turning, and shifting during sleep, chances are her head wouldn't stay on a pillow anyway. So wait until she moves to a bed to pony up a pillow. As for the blanket, the same advice holds true. Later is better than sooner. Though some parents start tucking their babies in with a blanket closer to 12 months, most experts advise holding off until at least midway through the second year. The risk of using a blanket, especially with an active baby, is less of suffocation and more that she might get tangled up in the blanket when she stands up in the crib, leading to falls, bruises, and frustration. Many parents opt instead for the one-piece footed pajamas on top of lightweight cotton ones to keep their babies warm on cold nights. When you do decide to throw in the pillow and blanket, don't let your preference for fluffy bed accessories guide your selection. Choose a toddler pillow that's smaller and very flat and a blanket that's lightweight. Wondering about your baby's little lovey? That small comfort blanket that never leaves your baby's hands is fine to bed down with from a safety perspective. From a cleanliness perspective, if it never leaves your tot's hands, well, that's a whole other story. A drop in appetite.
My baby used to eat like there was no tomorrow. Suddenly, he seems to have zero interest in eating. He only picks at his food and can't wait to get out of the high chair. Could he be sick?
More likely, the ever-sensible Mother Nature has curbed his appetite, and for very good reason. If he continued packing on the pounds at the rate he's been going so far, your baby would swell to the size of a third grader by his second birthday. Most babies triple their birth weight in the first year, but in the second year, they add only about a third of their weight. So a decline in appetite now is your baby's body's way of ensuring this normal decline in his weight gain rate. But that's not the only reason your one-year-old is clamping shut instead of opening wide. During most of his first year of life, mealtimes, whether spent in your arms or in a high chair, were among his favorite times. Now they represent an unwelcome interruption in his busy day. He'd much rather be on the go than sitting still for a bowl of cereal. So many things to do, so many places to see, so much stuff to get into, so little time. Growing independence is another reason he's shunning the spoon. He'd rather assert his autonomy than allow you to run the show, even, or perhaps especially, when it comes to eating. If you haven't already, you may want to retire your spoon and graduate him to all finger foods and a spoon of his own for practice. Maybe you're just serving too much food for his very tiny tummy. Toddler portions of food are surprisingly small. Think tablespoons, not cups. Scale down portions, and he may be less daunted in the face of food. You can always offer seconds. Maybe he's downing too many liquids and drowning his appetite. Cut back on bottles and sippy cups, especially those containing juice. Or maybe your baby's on a feeding strike because he dislikes being exiled to the high chair and would rather join the party at your table. A booster chair could erase the isolation and get him back in the eating game. Or maybe he can't sit still as long as the rest of the family can. And there's no reason why he should be expected to at this stage. Maybe he's lost his appetite temporarily because he's teething. Or maybe he's coming down with a cold. Bottom line, respect the appetite. As long as your baby is growing well and isn't showing signs of serious illness, there's nothing you need to do about food intake that's slacking. What's more, pushing, cajoling, or urging plate cleaning, or one more bite will only trigger more mealtime resistance. In fact, healthy babies and healthy toddlers who are allowed to eat to appetite can be counted on to eat as much, no more, no less, as they need to so they can grow and thrive. Your job, to offer him nutritious foods. His job, to eat as much or as little of them as he wants.
Don't have a cow. Your one-year-old is ready to graduate from formula to milk. Only problem is, he or she is allergic to cow's milk, and your pediatrician has suggested that you use a milk alternative. But you worry that your toddler won't get enough fat in his or her diet, since most milk alternatives have only about half the fat of whole milk. Not to worry. While it's true that non-dairy milk alone wouldn't provide all the fat a child under the age of 2 needs for optimum brain development, whole milk definitely isn't the sole source of fat. Ask the doctor about how your toddler can best meet those important fat requirements. Chances are, he or she can get plenty from a balanced diet that includes avocado, nut butters, if your little one's not allergic, meat, poultry, and fish, as well as oils used for cooking. After the second birthday, your toddler's fat requirements will be trimmed anyway to about the same as an adult's. What about calcium and other nutrients naturally found in cow's milk? Some milk alternatives stack up better than others, so make sure you talk over the options with your pediatrician, who can help you figure out which of these or others not listed here will work best for your one-year-old. Opt for the unsweetened variety of any you choose. Soy milk. The amount of protein in soy milk is comparable to that in cow's milk, as is the amount of calcium, if you choose the fortified kind, which you should. It also has roughly the same fat content as 2% milk. Almond milk has some fat in it, the good monounsaturated kind, and it's high in vitamin E and calcium. Choose one that's calcium and vitamin D fortified. Most are. Downside. It's low in protein, and it won't work if your little one also has a nut allergy. Coconut milk is high in fat, but low in protein and calcium. Some varieties are fortified with calcium and vitamin D. Rice milk is low in fat and protein, though higher in calories than other milk alternatives, but is also the least allergenic of all the milk alternatives. Some brands are fortified with calcium and vitamin D. Hemp milk is high in omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids with a moderate amount of protein, but most brands have thickeners in them and taste funky.
Increase in appetite.
I thought a one-year-old was supposed to experience a drop in appetite. My daughter's has seemed to grow and grow. She's not fat, but I can't help worrying that she will be if she keeps eating at this rate.
Maybe your baby's pit is bottomless because she's drinking less. Babies who are either just or just about weaned from the breast or bottle to the cup are likely to be getting less of their total calorie intake from milk and other liquids, and they may compensate by stepping up their intake of solids. Though it may seem as if your little one is taking in more calories, she probably is taking in the same number or fewer, only in a different form. Or it could be that she's eating more because she's going through a growth spurt or becoming more active, possibly because she's walking a lot and her body needs the extra calories. Healthy babies allowed to eat to their appetites, hearty or skimpy, without prodding by parents will grow at a normal rate. If your little one's weight and height are still following a familiar curve, there's no need to worry that she's overeating. Instead, pay more attention to the quality rather than the quantity of what she's gobbling up. If she's hungry for two bowls of fruit, that's fine. If she's hungry for two bowls of ice cream, not so fine. Also keep in mind that young children, like adults, can pretty easily fall into the habit of eating for the wrong reasons. That is, for any reason besides hunger. If you've been unwittingly feeding such a habit, giving her a snack to keep her content while you're shopping, or when she's really just craving cuddles, or to make boredom disappear, or to make a boo-boo get better, now's the time for a switch to a more sensible strategy, feeding her when she's hungry. Refusing to self-feed.
I know my son is perfectly capable of feeding himself. He's done it several times. But now he refuses to hold his bottle or even pick up a cup. If I don't feed him, he won't eat.
Growing up is hard to do. Even as your almost toddler tackles more and more skills that bring him closer and closer to the independence he seems to crave, his inner baby may balk at taking on too much self-sufficiency too soon. So he tries to find a happy yet secure balance between big boy and baby. Maybe he'll let go of your hands to stand on his own two feet, but not to feed himself. For now, he's content to let you do the heavy lifting of bottles and spoons while he sits back and enjoys those last cushy comforts of babyhood. Eventually, the big boy will triumph over the baby he still is, without a fuss. Make the bottle, the cup, and even a spoon available to him without insisting he use them. Offer him finger foods often. His early ventures into self-feeding will be more successful and satisfying if he uses the 5-pronged utensils that are conveniently attached to his wrists. Besides, it's still too early to expect him to use a spoon. Also make sure that you don't unwittingly sabotage self-feeding by getting exasperated over the mess it makes. Need eating won't be on the table for at least a year to come. When he does feed himself, applaud his initiative and his efforts and offer lots of reassuring attention. He needs to know that giving up being fed by mommy or daddy doesn't have to mean giving up mommy or daddy.
Going nuts? When it comes to peanut butter, most children and their parents are big fans. It's an inexpensive and versatile source of protein, fiber, vitamin E, and minerals that even the pickiest eater will gobble up. And here's a reason to let the gobbling begin sooner than later. Introducing peanut butter early may reduce the risk of your little one developing peanut allergy. Ask your pediatrician for recommendations on when and how to make the introduction, since the timing will differ from baby to baby. In general, babies at high risk for peanut allergy, those with severe eczema and/or egg allergy, should be introduced to peanut products as early as 4 to 6 months, as long as a skin prick test comes back negative. Babies with mild eczema should start peanut products at 6 months, and those without eczema or any food allergy can begin their peanut initiation anytime after 6 months. To minimize choking risk, spread thinly, diluting with water if necessary, never allowing eating by the finger or the spoonful, and wait until age 4 before bringing on the chunky variety. You can also serve corn puffs containing peanuts or thoroughly mix a dab of creamy peanut butter into applesauce or other fruit purees. These guidelines generally are also applied to tree nuts, almonds, walnuts, cashews, and nut butters. Be sure to serve them only finely chopped or ground, as in baked goods. Whole nuts, like whole peanuts, pose a choking risk and should not be given until a child is 4 or 5.
Growing independence.
My baby can't seem to make up her mind about what she wants. One minute she's crawling after me wherever I go, hanging on my legs while I'm trying to get work done. The next, she's trying to get away from me when I sit down to hug her.
Is your baby ready to declare her independence? Well, that depends. It depends on the day she's been having. A triumphant one of toddles or a trying one of tumbles. On how she's feeling, napped and recently fed, or hungry, overtired, and wired. Even on how those around her are feeling. Stress in the house, she'll feel it too, and cling accordingly. But most of all, it depends on the terms of her independence. She spies something shiny, bright, and deserving of a closer look, she'll leave your side in a heartbeat to check it out, without a moment's hesitation about separating from you. Independence declared. You get up from playing with her to check your text messages? That's independence on your terms, not on hers. And in her mind, that's not cool. Independence rejected. Dependence declared. Like most older babies and younger toddlers, your little one is conflicted, split between a craving for independence and a fear of paying too high a price for that independence. When you're busy with something other than her, especially when you're moving about faster than she can follow, she worries that she's losing her hold on you and the love, comfort, and safety that you represent. So she tightens her human Velcro grip. You're all hers? Then she feels confident letting go and putting her independence to the test. As she becomes more comfortable with her independence and more secure in the fact that you'll be her mommy and daddy no matter how grown up she becomes, she'll feel less conflicted. But expect this inner struggle between dependence and independence to continue on and off throughout her childhood, and definitely through her teen years, and even into her adult life. Don't you ever look back longingly on the days when you could always count on being taken care of? In the meantime, you can help her strike out on her own by making her feel safe and reassured when she does. If you're in the kitchen making a salad and she's across the divider in the family room, chat with her, stop periodically and visit with her, or invite her to help you, stationing her high chair next to you at the sink, for example, and giving her some zucchini and a soft vegetable scrub brush to work with. Support and applaud your baby's steps toward independence, but be patient, understanding, and welcoming when she stumbles and rushes back to the security and comfort of your arms. And most of all, be realistic in your expectations of her. There are just so many minutes, and you can probably count them on one hand, she'll agree to play or otherwise keep herself busy independently. But also be realistic in terms of the amount of time you can humanly supply in response to her demand. There will be moments when you'll have to let her hang on your legs crying while you get the groceries unpacked, and moments when you'll be able to provide only intermittent bursts of attention while you work on the taxes. As much as it's important for her to know that you'll always love her and meet her needs, it's important for her to know that other people, you included, have needs too. negativity.
Ever since my son learned to shake his head and say no, he's been responding negatively to everything, even to things that I'm sure he wants.
Congratulations, your baby is becoming a toddler. And with this transition comes the beginning of a behavior pattern you're going to see a lot more of, with increasing intensity in the next year or so. Negativity. As hard as it is to be on the receiving end of it, negativity is a normal and healthy part of a little one's developmental transition from dependent baby to more independent child. For the first time in his very young life, he's no longer just part of the parent package, an extension of your arms. He's his own little person on, or soon to be on, his own two little feet. He's determined to determine his destiny, define his individuality, assert his autonomy, test his limits, and of course, test your limits. It may not yet be his way or the highway, that's coming probably somewhere later in the second year, but he's definitely figuring out that he has a way, and that if he pushes hard enough, he might actually get his way. He has opinions, and he's not afraid to express them. And though his options for self-expression are still pretty limited, he's realized that no.